This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. We left Ruby in despair at the prospect of knocking on doors job hunting with a disgruntled Edie in tow. Will the attentions of Mr. Woods provide a pleasant distraction or get in the way?
Morning deepened the chill in the room. Ruby kissed Edie's flawless cheek and ruffled her hair. Time to get up. Come on, chicken. Edie growled in her throat and swore. And don't give me any of that nonsense. Ruby pulled on her clothes and tossed her daughter's garments over to her. When are we having breakfast? Edie's teeth were chattering as she dressed. We'll find out. For goodness sake, do your buttons up properly, Ruby said. The door was locked and the key hardly in Ruby's pocket when Edie trotted off down the corridor, calling out to the figure approaching the stairs.
Mr. Woods!
Good morning, Miss Barton, he said. Before Ruby could stop her, Edie blurted out,
Mr. Woods, you're a real Bon Brush man, aren't you? I saw your case. My mother has to buy a hairbrush.
Is that right? He said. Ruby flushed, conscious of his towel over her arm. She grabbed Edie's hand and gave it a warning squeeze.
I'm sure Mr. Woods has other things to do. And so have we.
Edie glared at her.
Mum, it's all right. We know Mr. Woods now. We're introduced. And we need a hairbrush.
She turned back to Mr. Woods.
She forgot to pack one. We had to use a comb.
I'm sorry, Mr. Woods. We're just on our way. Ruby reached out for Edie's wrist. Of course, he stammered. Ruby was on the verge of feeling sorry for him, so she added,
Perhaps we could see...
If you like, I can get my case and meet you here in 10 minutes.
Please, Mum, bleated Edie.
All right, said Ruby. That's good of you, thanks. As soon as they reached the bathroom, Ruby gave Edie's arm a pinch that made her yelp.
Don't you ever show me up like that again, she said between gritted teeth. You know you embarrassed Mr. Woods as well.
No, I didn't, Edie mumbled.
What do you think he's going to think of us?
Mr. Woods was waiting at the top of the stairs, a little pink-faced with his salesman's suitcase ready. He flipped the case open, turning it so they could see the contents.
I have a catalogue, and there are a few styles of hairbrush here, he said. They're samples, but I can sell you one now.
Edie reached for an oval, long-handled brush.
Too soft, Ruby said, running her thumb over the bristles and ignoring Edie's drowning puppy expression.
That one is 17 and 6, I'm afraid, he said. I can let you have it at cost.
Had he just shoved her impoverished state in her face? Ruby lowered her eyes. He had nice shoes, ox-blood-coloured brogues, dapper. Brush selling must be good.
No, she said curtly, picking up a smaller, plainer brush, running her thumb over the bristles.
That one's 10 shillings.
This'll do, she said, thinking of the bite out of her funds. Edie grinned, but Ruby saw her eyes linger on the oval brush as the case was closed. Morning light filtered under the blinds in the dining room. There was no sign of the trolley. Cooking odours and a babble of voices came through from the kitchen. Ruby pulled the blind up and Edie peered out the window. In a shaft of light, a woman winced, raising her hand over her eyes, as though the dull daylight pained her. Ruby remembered mornings like that. The woman sat hunched, wrapped in a muskrat fur. She'd been supping tea out of her saucer, a cigarette clamped between her fingers. Seeing Ruby, she placed the saucer over the cup. Her eyes were on Ruby as she took a long draw of her smoke. "Morning, pet," she said. Ruby acknowledged the woman with a tight smile and a nod, then turned away. She hadn't meant to stare. Spread out under the woman's cup and saucer, wet with spilled tea, was the previous night's Manawatu Evening Standard.
"Perhaps no one's told you, dear," the woman said. "You get your own breakfast. Go through. That Pim's in charge. Generally, it's every man for himself."
Ruby mumbled an acknowledgement and bundled Edie out. If the clock was right, it was 7:20. A radio crackled in the background of the busy kitchen, and the warmth reached Ruby before she got to the door. The long plank table was half covered with a stained seersucker cloth. Dirty ashtrays were scattered between dishes of butter, tins of jam and empty baked bean tins, bottles of sauces and condiments, and cups and saucers in use. One of last night's ladies, still wearing the same squashed-looking hat, sloshed dishes through the half-filled sink of soapy water. On the far side of the table, a man dipped a thick slice of buttered toast into his milky tea before cramming it into his gummy mouth. A second couple sat together, whispering and eyeing one another shyly, between glances at a flap-down electric toaster. One of the men blew on his burned fingertips. Edie's face shone with amusement. "Don't stare," Ruby whispered. Heading this chaotic assembly was Pim. Catching sight of Ruby, she stopped sawing through a loaf of white bread and pointed the knife at the end of the bench.
"Morning, love. Fresh pot of tea's there. Help yourself. Bert, you're minding that toast, aren't you?"
At the old range, a wire-haired woman slopped porridge into a bowl, then reached for a jug of milk, muttering inaudibly to herself. One of the men stood over a pan of splattering fat, a roughly rolled cigarette dangling from his lip.
"Don't you dare drop ash into those bloody snarlers, Ron," Pim shouted.
"Good morning," Ruby raised her voice to be heard. Pim flapped a tea towel over her shoulder.
"Sort yourself out, love. There's porridge left in the pot. A tin of baked beans is heating up if you want it."
Ruby took a bowl from a pile on the table. "I'll just get some porridge for Edie, please. Spoon?"
"Please?"
Pim waved her bread knife.
"Did you hear that, you ignorant lot? Here's a lady who knows manners."
She pointed to a drawer.
"Spoons. Ron, you got a sausage for the kitty?"
"She'd like that, if it's spare," said Ruby. A spiral of blue smoke from the toaster and the smell of burning bread produced an uproar of chuckles and complaints.
"Right, that's the last straw."
Pim banged her palm on the table.
"Bert, I'm banning you from the bloody toaster, you old bugger."
Bert snapped open the toaster flaps and flicked out the blackened slices.
"Ah, now, look what you made me do." He licked his finger. "Damn bloody thing. Burnt me flippin' finger again." "Mind your French."
Pim waved a finger in the air.
"There's ladies present."
Laughter went around the room as Bert reached for more bread.
"That's the second time he's done it today,"
Ron with the sausages declared.
"You got nothing to boast about, Ron," said Pim.
Those snarlers will be burnt too if you don't get them out of the pan. God almighty!
Arcane language to accompany more burnt offerings for the breakfast gods, I see.
It was Mr. Woods with a newspaper tucked under his arm. Edie, carrying her full plate, led the way into the dining room. Mr. Woods followed and sat at a table by himself with his toast and tea and opened his paper. The woman with the muskrat coat had gone, leaving her cup and saucer behind with her ashtray on the stained newspaper. Standing at the dining room window, Ruby sipped her tea. A curtain of rain sheeted off the guttering. As much as she needed a day's rest, there was no use trying. Not with Edie likely to pester her every 5 minutes. Not with the din and the smells of other people closing her in. Besides, there was no time to waste if they were going to start a new life. The wind had dropped. Bert's black toast now blemished the lawn. She turned to see how far Mr. Woods had got through his manawa two times. A morning paper. He acknowledged her with a nod, bit into his toast and turned the page. Backlit by the other window, his ears were pink, translucent shells. Edie scraped the porridge bowl with her spoon, and Ruby raised her finger.
Stop that. You know better.
Can I please have some toast? Edie said.
What happened to your sausage? Said Ruby.
Ate it?
Now you want toast as well?
Was there ever an end to the wanting?
Go on then, ask Pim. Mr. Woods looked up and grinned. The newspaper rustled as he folded it and put it to one side.
Would you mind? She began.
Please do.
He indicated the chair on the other side of his table.
No, she said. The paper. Would you mind if...
Ruby hated having to cadge.
Oh, yes, of course. Certainly.
He blushed as he handed it to her.
Just leave it there when you're finished with it.
Thanks.
He got to his feet.
You'll excuse me, won't you? I'd better be off.
When he'd gone, Ruby sat in the chair he'd offered. The situation's vacant column was short. Cooks, female. That meant a big kitchen in a large establishment, and they'd want someone permanent. She wasn't ready. Laundress, terrace end. Where was that? How would she get there? Domestic help for farmer. Live in. Child no objection. Applicants had to write to a private box. Would they care about her status? What else would the farmer want? Then she pictured herself skivvying from dawn to well past dusk, and nights, fending off a randy farmer in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, where would Edie go to school? What if Edie wasn't safe? If it turned out badly, they'd be stuck. Besides, she'd heard of live-in positions where a domestic was charged almost as much board as her wages. It was slavery. She knew all about that. Wasn't that much the same as the situation she was in with Mo Hanrahan? There had to be something else. Tea room waitress. She didn't have the shoes for being on her feet all day. Show card writer. 7 shillings 6 pennies per hour. Good brushwork essential. Brushwork wasn't one of her skills. Housekeeper, urgently required for a few weeks in June. No good. She needed to start now. Piano player wanted for a dance band. She'd laugh if she could. When Ruby got to the kitchen, Edie was sitting at the kitchen table, jam on her chin, an empty jam dish in front of her. Ruby guessed she'd been using her finger to get the last of the jam out of the jar.
Auntie Pim said I could, said Edie.
Ruby pressed her lips together. There was nothing to say. Dirty dishes were piled on the bench. On the cold hob, a pan of fat congealed around blackened bits of sausage. That'd need a good scrub. Amid all the breakfast mess,
Pim sat by the warm range, scanning a newspaper and listening to the morning radio serial.
Brought to you by Persil, for whites whiter than white.
The teapot was cold.
Shall I make a fresh pot? Said Ruby.
Lovely.
Pim turned up the dial on the radio.
May I have tea too? Whispered Edie.
Shush,
said Pim.
Oh, it's Dr. Paul, cried Edie. I know this one.
Shh,
Pim frowned. Ruby rinsed out a scum-saturated cloth, emptied the basin of sludgy water that had been left in the sink, and wiped the enamel sink out with some cleaning paste she found. Even if the evening paper had more advertisements offering short-term work, there'd be calls to make at tuppence a time, which could end up being a waste of money. It was all too dispiriting. She wasn't looking forward to begging for a chance for a few hours here, a few days there, where they'd pay cash to avoid paperwork. Still, she might come across a tea room that'd be glad to have someone to wash dishes for a few days, or a place that needed a cook or a cleaner to help out. Walking through the town in the horrid old coat and her scuffed blue high heels, with no stockings on her legs and a plaster on her heel, she might as well put a sign around her neck telling the world she was a pauper, or worse. Too bad. Just as well she'd shaved her legs a few days ago. And there was Edie to think of. That was the main handicap. Ruby began taking things to the sink, Pim leaning in towards the radio.
You can empty the ashtrays next.
Ruby steered Edie to the task. The bin's over there. Edie screwed up her face.
Come on. No one likes people who shirk. You don't want people to say that you think you're Lady Muck now, do you?
But, Mum,
Edie grumbled. Ruby gave her a warning glare. Come on, we'll clean up together. Pim flapped her hand.
Shush!
Ruby flicked the tablecloth free of crumbs and burnt corners of toast over the patchy back lawn. The weather had cleared and the morning was canopied with blue. A clump of red-stemmed rhubarb grew against a board and batten garage. The rest of the yard was littered with outbuildings in various stages of dilapidation, except for the freshly painted washhouse and a board and batten shack that may have once been a workshed or a stable, now turned into a dwelling where a jar of drying marguerites drooped in the curtained window. Down the yard, a poor man's orange tree laden with golden fruit leaned away from a corrugated iron fence. Part of a vegetable garden had recently been tilled. A few cabbages waited to be harvested, and the waist-high broad bean plants were already producing pods. Just as well she'd be long gone before those appeared on a plate. Leaves drifted into the yard and the cold breeze sent her indoors. Pim was putting dishes away, but Edie was nowhere to be seen.
Don't worry, dear, said Pim. I sent your little girl to have a look at the books in the front lounge.
Was she bothering you? She tends to chatter.
No bother at all.
Pim, there was a woman in a fur coat.
That'd be Molly. Comes and goes, said Pim. Keeps to herself. Best that way.
But look at you, dear. You're shivering.
You best put something warm on.
Something warm wasn't even on the list. In the shabby lounge, Edie was on the floor surrounded by books, an empty bookshelf behind her.
There's an old book with no dust cover, said Edie. And there's pages missing. Look, the complete works of O. Henry. What does O stand for?
You've got Marmite all over your face, said Ruby. For goodness sake, don't wipe it with your sleeve. Go upstairs to the bathroom.
There's a bathroom down here, said Edie, stomping out.
A small volume of Guy de Maupassant's short stories had fallen open. Ruby stroked the gilt-edged pages. When did she last have time to read? She replaced the books.
Good morning, Mrs. Barton.
Mrs. Thompson's voice was crisp.
"Where's the child this morning?"
"Oh, Mrs. Thompson. Good morning. Edie's gone to the bathroom. We were sorting books." She held Mrs. Thompson's stare, trying to decipher the ripples of expression on the woman's lined face. Mrs. Thompson almost smiled.
"Come in the kitchen. We'll put the kettle on."
"But, Edie," Ruby began.
"She'll find us."
The kitchen was empty when Ruby followed Mrs. Thompson through. Across the yard, Pim was heading to the washhouse.
"I've seen all sorts in my time. God knows."
Mrs. Thompson's tone may not have been warm, but there was no condemnation in it.
"I know very well what it's like to bring up a child on your own. A number of women have had to manage since the war. However, most respectable widows aren't on the run from something."
So it showed. Mrs. Thompson struck a match, lighting the gas under the kettle. The flame thumped and flared.
"Far be it for me to throw stones, goodness knows. Takes all sorts. But it's not easy, is it?"
Ruby watched her extinguish the match and put it back in the box.
"Have you worked out what you're going to do?"
"I'm going out this morning to find some sort of work, a job. I need money, or I won't be able to..." She stopped herself saying more. Edie's shrill voice cut in.
"Guess what I found? Kidnapped! I've been wanting to read it for ages! The dust cover's ripped, but I won't mind."
Mrs. Thompson's face soured. "Remember about not interrupting," said Ruby.
"And not speaking unless you're spoken to?"
"Quite right, Mrs. Barton. Now, child," Mrs. Thompson pointed her cigarette holder at Edie, "off you go and read. I want to talk to your mother."
Edie cast a scowl at Ruby as she left the room.
"Now, Mrs. Barton, wait here," said Mrs. Thompson. "Make us that pot of tea while I duck into the office."
The kettle had scarcely boiled when Mrs. Thompson reappeared, holding up a woolen jumper.
"I thought you could do with this," she said. "Someone left it here a while ago. It should fit."
"Are you sure?" Ruby hesitated. The jumper was soft, machine-knit lamb's wool. It would be warm. The temptation to accept the cast-off irked her.
"No need to thank me," said Mrs. Thompson.
"I was going to throw it out. Silverfish got to it on the sleeves. If you're handy with a needle and thread, you should be able to fix that."
"I like brown."
"Thanks." Ruby held it against herself. The silverfish holes on the wristband weren't too bad. Mrs. Thompson turned off the gas without making the tea.
"If you're off to find a job today, you can leave the child here if you like."
Ruby turned the offer over. Trust goes both ways. On the other hand, an unsettling sense of being manoeuvred into an obligation worked its way under her skin.
"All right," she said. "If you're sure."
"Thank you."
"She'll be safe with me," Mrs. Thompson said. "And Pim'll be here. You will be back, won't you?"
Ruby caught her breath. What did the woman think? Mrs. Thompson gave a nod.
"By the way," she said, "does the child know how to play chess?"
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.